Congress's middle child. Thank you all for coming today to celebrate the life of my father. One thing that we, Boris's children, experienced while dusting off and perusing the family albums is how we, after caregiving for over 20 years, had almost lost the memory of who my dad was before his stroke robbed him of so much and posed severe limitations on his life. Going back to old pictures and resurrecting old stories was like a restoration project, a rediscovering, a brilliant work of art, and wiping away the residue of aging, disability, and suffering that have diminished such vibrant colors. But these unwanted elements are part of his overall portrait, too, and combined with his life as a totality, add their own shades of complexity and death. What is each life, if not a series of continual deaths and resurrections? And today is a resurrection. Boris Timothy Krasloff was an eccentric, one-of-a-kind individual who was larger than life when he was in his element. He was born in the Chinese village of Fugerak, near Kusha, in the Xinjiang province on February 13, 1941, after his family fled with a band of fellow travelers from the Soviet Union. They trekked across China to Shanghai and emigrated to a refugee camp in Cubabao, the Philippines. It was there for around a two-year duration as a little boy that Boris fell in love with fishing, a passion that he never outgrew. His family immigrated to San Francisco in 1951 and joined the Gary Street Church, which was brimming with other Slavic refugees. A natural musician who had a talent for playing by ear, Boris accompanied with piano there and sang in the choir. One of his party tricks was playing the piano with his back on the piano bench and his arms crossed over his head to reach the piano keys behind him, like Mozart in the movie Amadeus. He performed hard labor in the lumber mill to finance his studies and graduated from Bethany Bible College. Boris was drafted into the U.S. Army in 1967 and survived a year-long tour with the U.S. Army in Vietnam as a conscientious objector and medic. As a medic in a combat zone, he put his life on the line, often while rescuing and attending to the wounded. When the overseeing officer of the medical supplies in Boris's platoon was apprehended for the misappropriation of prescription opiates, Boris was promoted to SP5 Medic, which is the same rank as a sergeant. He took over the responsibility for organizing and managing the medical supplies. For his heroism and exemplary service in a combat zone, he was awarded a Bronze Star. Boris married his sweetheart, Sarah Dumanovsky, in 1969, about 6 months after his return from Vietnam. And Boris and Sarah honeymooned in Monterey and Carmel by the sea. Halfway through their honeymoon, they grew restless of the luxury hotels. Sarah had never camped or hiked, and Boris persuaded her to try something different. They bought a two-person sleeping bag, forgoing the tent, and headed over to Yosemite, where they romantically slept under the stars. One of my dad's favorite stories was sharing how they awoke with what they thought was an earthquake. A bear had climbed a tree, grabbed their hanging backpack, which caused the rope to break, and down crashed the bag, bear and all. According to Boris, he yelled wildly, chasing the bear, and at the end of the pursuit, everything was strewn behind, but recovered, except for the sausage that the bear got away with. That story for me characterizes the spirit of adventure, energy, and hope that Boris and Sarah set out at the beginning of their journey together as a new couple. It was in the spirit of adventure that they moved to Oregon, where they became enamored with the Pacific Northwest. Boris was an outdoorsman who loved to camp, backpack, and fish, especially for salmon and steelhead. often hear the echoes of whooping and hollering down the canyon whenever he had a fish on. Boris and Sarah discovered a haven in the Wallawas, and for decades revisited the backpacking trek up to the top of Eagle Cat Mountain, taking the children and family friends with them to enjoy the pristine alpine lakes, glistening snowfields, spotted brook trout, and breathtaking views. To this day, Boris's son Yuri keeps the flame of Wallawa passion alive every time he visits his cabin in Joseph. As Boris and Sarah build their Oregonian lives, Boris worked in a variety of roles, such as selling insurance, driving a school bus, and maintaining the grounds of 99th Elementary School, where Sarah taught. He also gave piano lessons. How many people here did he give piano lessons to? Love it. Yeah. To accommodate one of his students, his son Yuri, who was born without a pinky, Boris renumbered the right hand piano score so that it could be played with four fingers instead of five. He enjoyed working as a jobs developer for refugees and immigrants through IRCO, which is a wonderful fit in light of his own family history. Boris loved to sing and had a deep, resonant, operatic voice. The staff at IRCO remember with fondness how the entire office was unintentionally serenaded several times a day with Boris's vocal exercises, as his vibrato reverberated out of the men's closed bathroom door. I wonder if his brain wasn't always looping a playlist of classical music in the background nonstop. Boris traversed through this eclectic assortment of jobs. His dream career passion was choral conducting. All that music was coursing through his body was compelled to fly out of his waving arms. Boris developed his choral conducting skills through various college classes and then began applying his skills at Russian Gospel Church in Hubbard. The crowning glory of his musical career was conducting the impressive choir at a Movable Foundation Church in Milwaukee, where he harnessed and polished the astonishing musical talent that existed in that Slavic congregation, and many of them are here. Thank you for being here. He gained notoriety for his high expectations, for his expressive flair, for the quality of his choir performances, and for the ways he infused his strict practices with unexpected hilarity. Part of that hilarity was his determination to improve his Russian, because some people thought that what he spoke resembled something more from an antiquated Soviet village. But he was determined to learn, and his attempts to try out new words, often used in the wrong context, were very entertaining. Boris always loved words, and before conducting in a Russian-speaking choir, he already was disciplined in practicing a method of systematically going through the English dictionary to expand his vocabulary. When he joined the Movable Foundation, he traded out the English dictionary for the Russian one. Many people who have spent time with Boris remember the numerous index card cartons of Russian vocabulary that he had around his home, and the flashcards that he carried around with him. You could not spend a day in the Praslav household without hearing Boris say a word in Russian again and again and again, because he said he had a thick tongue. He practiced repetition until mastery. This discipline was also true of his piano playing. Sarah said that early in their marriage, she had to flee the house at times due to his insane capacity for hammering out piano passages until he got them just right. Therefore, Boris was an accomplished pianist. Chopin and Handel were among his favorites. During a visit to Banff National Park, as he and Sarah walked through the lobby of Fairmont Chateau Lake Louise, he was transfixed by the pianist in the lobby who was playing the intoxicating song Clair de Lune by Claude Debussy. Refined it And his children grew up hearing their father losing himself in this song for as long as he still had the ability. When living in Woodburn, he participated in two piano concerts in the Woodburn Library, and the local newspaper described him as a world-traveling piano performer. In his passions, Boris was energetically single-minded and determined. His children remember him at home, present in body, but transported in mind to a concert hall as he stood in front of a stand with a music score on it while conducting to the wall. In his 50s, he was not deterred after a heart attack and subsequent 5 bypass heart surgery. He had the habit of climbing up on a chair during practice so his whole choir could see him. And he almost gave his choir members their own heart attacks when he continued to climb back up on that chair way too soon after his open heart surgery. I truly believe that the times that Boris felt closest to the divine were when spending time in the great outdoors, and that his deepest expressions of worship were when he was participating in the making of sublime music. And in the making of that music, he created spaces that invited others to join him in that deeper communion. His golden season of making beautiful music was tragically precluded by a stroke, after which Boris persisted in hope with a positive attitude for another 2 decades, chock full of endless witty comments, even through a season of dialysis during his final years. The season of disability made him a softer man. He cried at commercials. We had never seen that before. His appreciation for love and for animals grew. He enjoyed his lazy boy lookout in the living room that had a view of the yard with a bird bath, a bird feeder, and beautiful pine and oak trees, seen through his floor-to-ceiling glass windows. He often recorded what was happening that day with the deer, the birds, and the squirrels. He was enchanted with clouds and often commented on their beauty. He memorized verses and even whole chapters of the Bible. He had a low-key obsession with his son-in-law, Al. Who was both his hero and his best friend. And the admiration was well deserved because more than anybody, Al pampered him and defended him against my mother. His final days of hospice were filled with continual visitors, lots of love, and even something like an old-fashioned gospel sing-along with his in-laws that perked him up enough to sing along even when he was too weak to open his eyes. After all the visitors left one night, I have a sweet memory of my mom and dad holding hands and singing the Lord's Prayer together. As he lay in the living room in his hospital bed before going to sleep. Though he left San Francisco as a young man, he remained staunchly loyal to the 49ers his whole life. And we wonder if their painful and utter defeat to the Seattle Seahawks, which eliminated them from the playoffs, help release Boris from trying to stick around. He passed away on January 18, 2026, in the presence of his loved ones in his home. He is survived by his wife, Sarah, children, Yuri, Eric, Masha, and their partners, and his beloved granddaughter, Gracie, and his caregiver Sheila, who was like an adopted daughter, that knew how to throw Boris's spiciness right back at him, and he loved her for it. He lives on in Yuri's love for sports and fishing. And Eric's appreciation of music. And Basha's love of animals and nature. And his granddaughter Gracie, who looks more like Boris than anyone else in the family. And who had so many similarities with Diego that we call them grand twins. Thank you all who have already shared memories with our family and who will share more memories with us today. Putting Boris's story together reminds me of how multifaceted a life is, how multidimensional a person is. And I have no doubt that there are people listening who have volumes to add to the novel of Boris's life through his friendships I haven't even touched on, many of them seen in these memorial pictures. A parent-child relationship is only one slice of a much larger and richer picture of who a person is. And all I can do is share what I've seen and heard from my unique and limited relational location. Your stories help to keep the richness of all that he was alive in our memories. Thank you for coming today, live streaming or watching a recording of this memorial service, and for sharing your stories either sometimes today, during the service at the buffet, on the note cards, on the memorial table, or on Boris's memorial website.